You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 456 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
You were about to say host.
Oh,
you
no.
Think you got a promotion.
Demotion.
Producers! And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we are coming to you from separate locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion Storm.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of Sam Darnold. And your Super Bowl 48 champion, Seattle Seahawks.
Well, you know, speaking of the Super Bowl 48 champions, it is, of course, the Cliff Averill edition.
Hello.
Of the podcast. I was thinking about it earlier, and like, other teams were just really dumb back in 2012. I don't know what to tell you. Or 2013, whatever the year was. How they let the Seahawks get Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett for the contracts they did.
Let me just give you a counterpoint if you think the teams are smarter now.
Well,
are you ready for it?
What's that?
The Philadelphia Eagles. We gave them in back-to-back years Jalen Carter and Cooper DeJean just on a platter. Like,
oh, wow, this is your take now?
But I mean,
they
like,
win one Super Bowl, and all of a sudden you're like, wow, they should have drafted every Georgia defender.
I mean, it's kind of Jalen, I'm saying
this is an incredible.
Devin Witherspoon is still the right pick over Jalen Carter, but I'm not going to deny that the Eagles got a freaking steal out of it. Like, in their lap. Cooper DeJean, I never argued about before.
The big thing is that the Eagles were like a very good team that got
all
the sixth
pick
in the draft.
I don't just need to give them those two players. It was the seventh pick. It was like pick 10.
Whatever he was. But they still had a much higher pick than they should have because they traded. It was a bunch of like trading.
It was all sorts of complicated trading. Yes, I went through the whole thing. It was very impressive. But the amount of players that the Eagles just had fall into their lap is like, teams ain't that much smarter now.
Well, let me tell you, okay, there's not a lot of bargains out there in free agency to be had. The bargains are, you know, 30-year-old wide receivers now. So we'll get to that. I guess we'll get to that right now.
Fourth among corners by Pro Football Focus as a rookie. And we all knew it wasn't a mystery. Everybody knew he was probably the most famous player in the draft.
I mean,
right,
I think that was for demographic reasons.
But still, whether it's for demographic reasons or not, we all knew.
I wouldn't say I knew. I might have suspected, but I would not say that I knew.
You knew who he was. Pick 40.
I
39
I
other
Cooper
picks
DeJean
happened
was.
Before then.
I do want to quickly shout out. The Diavola is rising up my rankings of Seattle's best slice from Pagliacci.
Hello.
Had that earlier. The hot honey.
That's the hot honey? No, I think that might be the number one slice.
I'm telling you, we need to do it. We got to do it. The search for Seattle's best slice.
You really love Spawn Gone?
When it involves me eating Pagliacci slices, yes.
Can we get some extra Pagliacci money for this?
I think the money is pretty much endless as it is.
If there's bonus Pagliacci money, I'm down. I agree about the Diavola. I don't eat sausage. How do we handle that? I could eat sausage for the search.
Oh yeah, for the search. Yeah,
I'm not like allergic to sausage. I can eat it for the sake of it. Just have my stomach suffer.
Yeah, it's one slice.
We're
of
literally
pizza.
In the middle of another search, and you're proposing a different search.
I refuse to
abandon the cookie search.
I'm not abandoning the cookie search either. Although I did not get any cookies during my time in Boston, sadly. Last time I was competing harder and I got two different cookies in Boston.
Well, you might have exhausted all the good cookies in Boston.
Oh,
but
there, I did see a cookie place at one point. I was like, oh, that looks interesting, but I did not go there.
Did you see, by the way, this is dating back to our donut search, Good Lazy Donuts, which was operating out of just a house in Maple Valley.
And now, the farmer's market.
Yeah, farmer's market, house pre-orders. Now it's a brick and mortar location in Issaquah.
And it was like, written up in the Seattle Times today. And according to Instagram, their
3 years
problem,
later, Seattle Times.
They may have mentioned it previously. I don't want to like.
I don't know.
It seems like their biggest problem from Instagram is that they're running out of donuts too early because people love them so much.
It's kind of undeniable. Like, it's a little. I'm happy for them that they have a brick and mortar location, but It was so convenient for me, children's baseball wise, to order donuts on a Sunday and go pick them up. And just having donuts ordered beforehand that you could just go grab, it's an amazing sneak.
Which is why you did it literally times. Did you do it that often? I don't know.
Like three times. That's fine.
Okay. Yeah. All right, anyways.
Pre-ordering is now a sneak.
You know, always has been. Did you see that they're doing a Pac-Pac, like, final goodbye at Friends of the Pod Jeju in Portland?
Really? Big blowout. They're going out with a bang.
It's the week of the second week of the NCAA tournament, so I'm going to Spokane at the end of the week to cover the women's regionals.
I thought you were going to say you're going to Portland.
It's going to be hard. No, sadly, last year I was there for that same event, but the timing is not perfect. But if there's any way I can sneak down to the Cavs Blazers game on March 26th and get some Pac-Pac wings out of it, I got to see what I can do.
If there's any way that you can,
yes.
We already heard that you weren't competing in Boston. Maybe you should try. You know what podcast you're on? God.
Well,
you're like,
I'm
thinking I'm going to not compete this time.
It is a podcast.
Pete Carroll's back and you're not going to compete?
Pete Carroll's the opposition now. I don't want to call him the enemy because I think we probably are pretty pro Raiders on this podcast at this point.
I was going to say, it depends on what angle you're looking at it at.
Anyways, let's talk about the former employers of Geno Smith and Pete Carroll, the Seattle Seahawks. And
I was going to say, you might be talking about future Pete Carroll employee, if this is who you're talking about.
Who?
Tyler Lockett.
Oh, no, that's not who I was talking about right now. We'll get to that in a second. I want to talk about the moves they've made since our last three Seahawks emergency pods, since our most recent weekly pod. Oh, how young we were when we recorded
this. Did
we do
three? We only did two, right?
DK Metcalf.
Didn't we do a
DK Metcalf trade request, Geno Smith trade, Sam Darnold signing were the three emergency pods. Yeah.
We're doing many emergency pods. I don't even
You've lost track. Because we recorded very early last week. We recorded on Monday night. Wednesday, the DK Metcalf trade request broke. Friday, the Geno Smith trade broke. Sunday, while I was flying back from Boston, the DK Metcalf trade broke. And then Monday, the Sam Darnold signing. And the Seahawks were not done. They continued to transact. Look, the Seahawks were like, I heard you like transact. So we got some transact to put in your transact.
There we go. They were like, the Mariners didn't do anything
this
offseason.
That is true. The Mariners had, I mean, it's funny because it's not like people are like, oh, hey, this was great. Love this. 10 out of 10. No notes. People hate this one too, but for very different reasons, the Mariners. You cannot question the Seahawks being inactive.
They had one weekend that was more active than the Mariners' entire offseason.
They had one day that was more active than...
It was kind of a two-day stretch.
But just trading Geno
was
in and of itself.
They've stretched them like one day at a time.
They've sequenced them for emergency pods.
Yeah, that's how they do it. Anyway, I was going to say, have you been performatively angry on the internet lately? Because a lot of the Seahawks fan base has. My God.
Wednesday.
There's a writer who I love that posted about a signing that happened today where I was just like, for real? For real? You're joining into the performatively angry on the internet? Come on, people. Like,
and that person was apparently me.
The Seahawks don't even affect your life that much. I was actually thinking about it where I was like, we watch this team 17 times a year.
I mean,
if we're lucky, a few times more. The jokes are fine, but I'm like, can everybody just calm down?
I have been thinking about it a bit. And I do think part of why...
You've been thinking about being performatively angry on the internet?
Yes. Why I'm not as unhappy about the breakup of the Seahawks offense as some people is partially related to the fact that...
Because the Seahawks offense sucks.
I mean, it was below average last season. That's a factor. But just like, I found it kind of boring. And I got to tell you, I don't know. It could be, as we said on the last podcast about Sam Darnold, it could be good. It could be terrible next year. But I'm curious to find out. I am very fascinated to find out.
I feel like I get fed clips of just two opposite perspectives. People being like, I think this is terrible. And people being like, I think this is good. And I'm like, y'all, it's probably somewhere in between. The Pelton cast is here to say,
Is this a new Peltoncast motto?
What?
It's the
no,
Peltoncast
no
motto
take.
is
I will develop
everything.
an opinion later.
Yeah. The Peltoncast motto is everything is fine, but as opposed to, like, you know, the meme of the
this is
fire.
fine. Yeah, this
This
is
is
fine meme.
fine. It
We're like
also could be everyone else is celebrated and you're like, this is fine.
I don't know if that's true.
Everyone else could be celebrated and you're like, well, this just means that Kalen DeBoer is going to Alabama. But then you're also, but then everyone else is fear the fire meme. And then you're like, but this means they're going to hire Jed Fish.
I think the Peltoncast meme is more, I will wait to formulate an opinion later. Because that's really the only way that you can talk about this offseason. You can form, like, look, it's not because everybody has had opinions both directions.
It might be, I don't think they've had both directions. I haven't seen,
oh,
like,
no, there's
about
people,
individual
Colin,
signings.
Colin Cowherd is going, like, he's like, this is a great sign. He's like, is 21 he? Touchdowns, 15 picks. And I'm like, does nobody else remember this? Like, what happened with Geno Smith in the last 3 months since the season ended? Even less. All of a sudden, I told you this before, I feel like we are living in the movie Heathers and Geno Smith is who we're talking about. And I'm like, did a trade request define change who Geno Smith was? I thought we were all kind of in agreement about where Geno Smith was, but we weren't.
No, because as I said on the last podcast, I think part of it is the segment of the Seahawks fan base that was so vociferously, Geno's holding the team back. They'd be the Super Bowl champions if it weren't for Geno. Like, there's such an overcorrection to that that all of a sudden
I still
Geno begins.
Think I say your point, but I'm gonna agree with it and disagree with it at the same time.
I mean, I do
you
think
don't have all takes if you only have some takes.
Fair. That's I do think another factor in it is there is just a difference in perspective between the tape grinders who tend to be very prominent in the Seahawks community and the statistical part of the Seahawks community. I don't think the statistical part of the Seahawks community is up in arms and about this. And it's a fascinating disconnect from on many levels. I do think one part of it is, like, so much of tape, you know, player evaluation via tape is like trying to distill things to individual skills. And sometimes, like, the big point that gets made repeatedly about Geno is if you look at obvious pass situations, how effective he was there. His on-target percentage is something that Mina had, that third Pelton brother Mina Kimes has referenced.
Did you listen to Mina's podcast about it?
I haven't. No, I.
Okay, kept... I was going to ask if she had a plan, because that's what I'm kind of like. I'm like, what did you want otherwise? Is it just run it back, and you actually think that the Seahawks were going to be good?
Well, I think there could have been a lot of faith in Clint Kubiak and the upgrade from Ryan Grubb. I do think that was a reasonable position to take. But I do think sometimes, like, you can get so carried away and, like, focusing in on these micro skills that you lose kind of the bigger picture that Geno's
if
overall
only
performance
there was a
has been average.
Phrase to describe something like that. God, somebody should come up with an idiom. Maybe the Peltoncast will. I don't know.
Wait, which one are you talking about? The Peltoncast?
The forest through the trees?
Oh, okay.
It's like, that's what you're literally describing. You're like,
I don't know if this is quite that.
Yes, it is exactly that.
Okay.
It's about focusing on a small bit when you're not focusing on the bigger picture.
But I think the thing here is it's more like
it's
people,
about football.
No, people like focus very much on rating individual component skills, but then it's like, well, how do you weight those component skills?
Yeah, like it's like you see one tree and then you're like, is it part of something bigger than this?
I mean, one of the confusing things about Geno that I...
You're trying really hard to invent a new idiom when it already exists. Look, school buses exist. City buses exist. We have libraries.
Thank God we do. Responsible for much employment of the Fulton family. It's just what I'm saying. It's like, and there's a lot of fascinating things about Geno's season. Like, you could do a whole, you know, podcast on just Geno Smith's 2024 season. Because another point that Mina made is Sam Darnold had more turnover-worthy throws for Pro Football Focus than Geno Smith did, despite having a much lower interception rate. And I understand that, like, turnover worthy plays converting into interceptions, there's a lot of randomness there.
I'm shocked by that information. There were a lot of balls that Geno threw that weren't picked off that could have been picked off.
I do also think there's an element where this is something that irks me about the term 50-50 balls in basketball. It's like, they're probably not 50-50, probably one of them 70-30 and one of them 30-70. So like Geno, it does feel like there was some passes he threw that like just a defender straight dropping it was the only way it was not going to be an interception. And I don't like that might be getting weighted the same in the tape as a play that was like a 40% chance of it being an interception that Sam Darnold threw.
We're getting too caught up in the Sam Darnold, Geno Smith conversation by trying to define who's better between Sam Darnold and Geno Smith. And I don't even think that that's what the conversation should be, because that's not what we're talking about. Like, that's what people are talking about. It's the same as the Luka Doncic trade, right? Where it's like, Luka's better than Anthony Davis right now. But also, like, even apples to apples, it was a bad trade. But the reason it was a bad trade,
the reason
is
it was
because,
an F,
is because of all the other stuff, right? It's probably like a C or C minus or something if they're the same age and the same contract. But the reason that it doesn't make sense to compare Geno Smith and to Sam Darnold is because they don't have identical contracts, right? Geno Smith is not going to have the same contract that Sam Darnold is going to have. He's going to be making more money when he's in Vegas.
The more important thing, the average salary is whatever. It's the guaranteed money and the difficulty to get out of it that is probably going to be more important.
It's that. It's his age. It's whether he's happy being there as well. Because, again, you could just be like, well, you could run Geno back for one season. Geno could hold out. Sam Darnold's not going to hold out.
Well,
he just signed
extending Geno. I think the plan for people who are upset about the trade and signing Sam Darnold is they were going to extend Geno. Those things are highly correlated. Here's the thing I wanted to talk about related to that.
Okay.
In the third round pick, I guess, is the rest of your point.
Yes.
Is a lot of people are talking about the Seahawks are taking a risk by signing Sam Darnold. And undoubtedly, yes. Sam Darnold could suck this year. I did think Third Pelton brother, Shiel Kapadia, he felt like the Seahawks were paying for the outlier season because Darnold had not been effective before 2024.
He wasn't pulling up that RBSDM 2022 like we were.
He was not grinding that particular stat.
Yeah, Shiel, 140 plays, baby.
Nick Mullins was pretty good as the Vikings starting quarterback in 2023 during the period where Justin Jefferson was healthy. I think that's the argument in favor of that point. But Darnold was better. And the other thing is they're not paying him as if he's going to be as good as last year. As you've made the point, they're paying him as probably about the 20th to 24th best starting quarterback. Not what he was last year, which was somewhere
again,
between the 10th
and 18th
best. I would
argue it's not the 20th to 24th best quarterback, because you still have to factor in every quarterback who's paid less than him, starting quarterback who's paid less than Sam Darnold, a first-round pick was used to select them, aside from an extraordinarily small group of players. So there's still an alternative cost to those players, right?
Yeah.
The cost of not drafting a player with those first-round picks is still a very large cost that those teams are making. And I mean, it's literally Brock Purdy's about to get extended. That's it. As far as I could, I think, or Justin Fields, the Justin Fields deal is lower, but the other piece that you're talking about is the variance, right? So.
But I wanted to make a case that Geno Smith's variance is high, because exactly. People keep saying it's a risk to sign Darnold. It's like, what is the scenario with a quarterback that's not a risk? Because the only options are you pay them, you have a really good quarterback and you pay them a shit ton of money and there's a risk that they get hurt. You have a quarterback whose performance is uncertain. That's a risk. You have a rookie quarterback. That's a risk. And Geno Smith, him potentially falling off due to age is a risk in and of itself.
Aside from having one of four or five quarterbacks across the league, every quarterback is a risk. And that's what I think people don't understand. And that's why I've been so annoyed about the Geno conversation, because it's like, oh, this is such a risk. It's like, am I living in a different timeline? And that's where I think people are defining Geno differently than Geno actually was last year, as if it wasn't a risk to run it back with Geno Smith. Also, what does risk mean? Like, in this scenario, the goal is to win the Super Bowl, right? As an NFL franchise.
That's not the only goal. Because I think it's fair to say that, like, there is value to just making the playoffs for a large number of years.
I agree. And that's the other thing where people are like, yeah, wait until Sam Darnold gets to the playoffs. And I'm like, okay. Cool. But like the scenario that the Vikings went into the playoffs was a very unique scenario. overall. They were in conversation for the number one seed heading into week 17.
Are either unique or not unique. They can't be very unique.
Okay, fine. I think this was a particularly unique. I just used a different adjective.
This is mostly a pedantic podcast.
But they're all risks. The Rams bringing back Matthew Stafford is
huge
a risk. Like, all of these things, the 49ers paying Brock Purdy. I mean, Brock Purdy's going to be paid to, like, one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL. You know, your tape grinders are probably not going to say that Brock Purdy is one of the five best quarterbacks in the NFL. That's a risk. Running it back with Kyler Murray, that's a risk. Is Kyler Murray better than Geno Smith? Is Kyler Murray better than Sam Darnold? I don't know. Nobody knows, right? He's in the same fucking tier because that's where all of these quarterbacks live.
They and live in the fat part of the distribution where there's not a lot of, there might be a distinction in ordinal rank, but there's not a lot of distinction in actual performance the way that there is among the top five quarterbacks.
But the
way people define this is when they say risk, what they actually mean is regret. Because if the Seahawks sign Sam Darnold and he's bad, the Seahawks will regret that decision. John Schneider in particular will regret that decision, as John Schneider will probably be fired. But if John Schneider had just extended Geno and he had gotten worse due to age, people would have been like, well, who could have seen that coming?
So it's like a risk for one person.
But people are so fearful of regret, not of actual risk.
I agree. They're scared to compete. Pete Carroll wasn't scared. Maybe he was. I don't know.
He did end up, instead of taking a rookie, I mean, they may take a rookie quarterback as well. He got Geno Smith, so he was a little scared of upside as well, I would say.
I think you're totally right, though, about, again, like, all of these things are risky moves. Having any quarterback is a risky move. There's, again, unless you're able to, and that's what I felt about all the other transactions, where people are like, when I was saying about being performatively angry on the internet, it's like, did you think they were going to sign Justin Jefferson? Like, I don't, what did you want
Will
from
Fries.
This?
They wanted Will Fries. He was the guy.
But that is, I would argue that Will Fries is a riskier signing than even Sam Darnold.
A guard who has started, I believe, 23 career games and is coming off a fractured fibula that required surgery and ended this season.
I mean, the thing that I was saying about, like, about Shield.
Sorry, 31 career games. He did start games in 2022 as well.
That she was saying about Sam Darnold paying for the outlier season.
Well, Will Fries was a 7th-round pick.
That might be true. He's a fucking guard, people. Like, I'm shocked that the Seahawks were even willing to have the conversation beforehand. But the other piece about it is, like, they're like, well, putting Sam Darnold behind that line, I don't know how that will go. And it's like, we know how that will go. We watched it last year. Geno Smith and Sam Darnold are probably going to be about the same behind that offensive line. And where did the Seahawks offense rank in DVOA? 18th, 20th, something like
20th.
That. Like, it's not like this offense was great last season. So
there's one of my favorite lines that I often think about in situations like this is Bob Whitsitt, when the Sonics traded Jack Sikma, when he took over as general manager in the summer of 1986, and they had gone, I want to say 37-45 the season before. And, you know, people were questioning about it. The media was questioning about it. And he was like, what exactly is it you object to me taking apart here? And I feel a little like that about the Seahawks offense.
That is exactly how I feel about the direction overall. They just needed a shakeup, and they took, it's a swing is what it is. I don't even know if it's risky necessarily. They took a big swing on Sam Darnold, and sometimes you miss. And that's why I've kind of argued all takes wise. I'm not here to say that Sam Darnold is better than Geno Smith right now. And I'm not here to say that it's going to work, whatever that means. But process wise, given the contract, given the pick, given everybody's age, I think this was the right process decision. It might fail with Sam Darnold. And you know what? That's fine. Because the other option, the what are we blowing up here? What do you object to? Is extending a 34-year-old quarterback. Is that right? 34?
Yep.
A 34-year-old quarterback who will age at some point. There have been a lot of quarterbacks who've aged younger than Geno Smith and still putting him behind a relatively similar offensive line. On another player, DK Metcalf. Because people have brought up DK Metcalf. I was thinking about this earlier. And there's basically no argument. You've said timing wise, right? Like that's why he's being paid like the third best receiver in the NFL. But he's still getting that deal in that range. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, assuming the next couple of seasons go well, will also be paid in that same range, right? And there's kind of a balance that has to be made when you're putting together a roster of the Seahawks more or less couldn't have afforded to do this extension for Geno, couldn't have afforded to do this extension for DK, and then also have the money to extend the players eventually, because there's money down the road coming. It's not just this offseason, right? There's future money at bay, and extend those players that we're going to want to extend after that. It's a lot of money to tie up in two receivers and in a quarterback, especially if you're not if those players aren't commensurate with where they stand. There aren't a lot of teams in the league who are able to pay two wide receivers top five money. And the Seahawks would have been paying one top five money, but still an asset for JSN that they gave up with the first round pick. He's not being paid nothing. And having a quarterback at that place, we want to extend likely players like Treqwell, right? Other players on the roster. And I think Mike McDonald gives a shit about this defense. So spending a ton of money on offense wasn't going to sit very well with Mike McDonald overall. And he's the coach. He's the person you brought in to coach this team and to contribute to the direction of it. They had to find some places to save a little bit of money. And those places were blowing it up on offense and taking making higher risk decisions. I think it does mean that they'll draft offensive players maybe slightly higher than they would have otherwise, and those are assets that they're using, but they are cheaper overall.
I don't know, to Ben Baldwin's point when we had him on the season recap podcast, like part of the point of having Mike McDonald is that he should be getting more out of cheaper defenders, so you shouldn't necessarily be having to spend as much on defense. So I'm not sure I agree that the Seahawks should be thinking now about Devin Witherspoon extensions. Reek Woolen, I'm still not convinced they're ready to commit long-term to him.
Pray tell, imagine having that conversation with Mike McDonald. Like, we hired you because we're going to go cheap on defense. It's just,
I mean,
it's
not
like
even
a
cheap on defense, but just like if the whole point
so
is to
good.
Spend more on defense because you have a defensive coach, that doesn't make sense to me. That is that.
But you still can't have that conversation with Mike McDonald.
Well, first off, you don't have to. You're his boss. He signed the contract. Like, that's the job. So I don't understand that piece of it. But I agree that the Seahawks just can't sign everyone and also fill holes. Like people, you know, is this the case with politics? People want all the surfaces without all the taxes. And that's just not how it works because that's fantasy land. But I don't know. I mean, I think we can get too carried away in talking about this part of it. I think our positions are clear. Should we talk about the new players the Seahawks have signed?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Let's start with DeMarcus Lawrence, because this is probably going to be the biggest money other than Sam Darnold that they spend this offseason. I'm very curious to see the structure of this contract, which has been reported as 3 years, up to $42 million, $18 million guaranteed. So a significant amount of either non-guaranteed or incentive money or escalators in this contract. Lawrence turns 33 next month, is coming off a season-ending Lisfranc injury in week 4, had 3 sacks in 3-plus games before that, was a Pro Bowler in both 2022 and 2023 for the Cowboys, his only NFL team, when he played all 17 games both of those seasons after suffering a broken foot in 2021, although his sack production was not where it was during his, you know, star heyday with the Cowboys. Even the last couple of those Pro Bowl seasons, he totaled only 10 sacks, fewer than he had in either 2018 or 2017 when he finished second, All-Pro second team and fourth in Defensive Player of the Year voting. All right, this is where you were going to chime in here.
It's another swing. I mean, this is a risky deal that they signed. I think this is one that I don't love necessarily, but you know, they were clearing out cap in a relatively similar position, right? With Dre Jones.
I don't think they're done.
I think this
signals that Chenin Wosu is, yeah, that
Which
this
makes,
is his replacement.
It makes sense to me also to make that decision, but at his best, DeMarcus Lawrence can be one of the best players on this defense. Whether that is an actual possibility, I'm a little skeptical about, but again, it's a pretty big swing overall. And I think they're really looking at that 2024 Cowboys season is just, it's a lost season for everybody involved. And it was a brutal season for everybody across the board. But he was very good in 2023, right? He was one of the best run defenders in the league. The best run defender
I think
in the league,
that's
right?
In 2022, he was number one in run stop win rate in ESPN's rankings. I think PFF might have had him rated higher in 2023 than ESPN.
I was
going to
say,
did.
I thought he was number one in 2023 by PFF.
This, I think, is what this signing is about. Like, I think the Seahawks felt good about their young pass rushers and their ability to get to the quarterback, but, you know, wanted to continue improving their run defense. And you know, it's kind of, they're signing Lawrence not for his sack production, for his ability to be a pass rush threat and stop the run on early downs. So, you know, again, we got to see what the structure of this contract is. That's probably going to be more critical here than almost anywhere else. But
I would assume this is going to be a deal that they're going to be able to get out of relatively easily.
It sure seems so. Certainly after year two, if not after year one. Like, it may be a situation where after year one, it's kind of a cap neutral deal. And then after year two, there's the potential for significant savings is if they move on. So their other signing, starter caliber signing, I guess, let's say, is wide receiver Marquez Valdez-Scantling at 1 year, reported it up to $4.5 million, presumably some incentives in there. Valdez-Scantling is age 30 and the biggest boomer bust receiver in the NFL. I posted the chart about this on Blue Sky from the Pelton Cast account, if you're not following it there. He's caught under 50% of career targets, the lowest of any active receiver, but those have gone for 17.4 yards per reception, the most of any active receiver with at least 250 targets. So he's making them count. When he does catch them, it's a lot of deep balls and a spot in the offense that the Seahawks haven't necessarily had in a bit of time here.
I mean, if you're going to sign a big arm quarterback, you might as well give him an option to throw to downfield. You know, I think it makes sense. It's low risk. This was a fine signing by me. And this was the one where I was like, eventually I think people were pretty happy with it. Cause I was like, it's another swing, I think, I guess is what it is. And people will really point to his time in New Orleans last year with Clint Kubiak and had a pretty productive stretch overall.
Yeah, he had just two catches in six games with Buffalo. He was signed with the Bills after he was waived by the Chiefs, winning two Super Bowls in Kansas City. He signed a one-year deal with the Bills, similar to the one he presumably has signed, didn't sign until May, but then he was waived after the Bills dealt for Amari Cooper. Signed with the injury-riddled Saints, and in the final eight games, averaged 48 yards per game, which would be a career high over a full season. Had four touchdowns in those eight games after just three total in two seasons with Kansas City, and played 66% of snaps. So they were using him as a wide receiver too. And it will be interesting to see what this means for the Seahawks' pursuit of Cooper Kupp now that he has been waived by the Rams.
I do not think this means anything for the Seahawks' pursuit of Cooper Kupp. I do not think they're looking at this as, I mean, they may not sign Cooper Kupp. I think there's going to be, and it's been reported that there's a pretty healthy market for Kupp overall. Like, a lot of teams could use a Cooper Kupp like player. Also, another swing, like, you know, depending on the kind of money that it looks like, it's a brisk to sign somebody like Cooper Kupp, but at his best when paired with JSN, when paired with Marquez Valdez-Scantling, can still be one of the best receivers in the league.
Yeah, I guess the question just would be then, do you feel like you have too much veteran depth to feel comfortable taking a receiver in the first two rounds or three rounds?
Absolutely not. We don't know what the Seahawks are going to do. They probably don't know what they're going to do. You know, they can't look at it and just say. But we've talked about this. The Seahawks like to go into the draft with somebody.
Correct.
At every position. And I don't think they're going to go into the draft and say, we're set at wide receiver with just, no offense to Jake Bobo and Drake Young, but with just MVS and JSN.
I agree. I do think Valdez-Scantling could be the kind of player who's precisely that, on a one-year deal, not that much money, who's precisely that sort of, if we don't draft someone, we're going to be fine with him. If we do sign someone, it's okay. Valdez-Scantling and Kupp does feel a little too deep.
Too deep.
just in terms of like if you're drafting a wide receiver in the first round, how much are they going to get on the field at that point? Which maybe they're not even thinking about. Maybe they're thinking about long term, which is, you know, probably the right approach to have. But I, yeah, that's just what I'm wondering.
I think it really depends on who's out there in the draft. Again, like, I think they are going to go in the draft and have every position mostly set. And they have a lot of draft picks. I guess we'll get there in a second. But they have a lot of draft picks and they have a lot of relatively good draft picks. They're going to be players who they're going to have every position set in their minds and draft players that are going to compete with the entrenched starters in camp and beat some of those players.
I mean,
That is
Tarae
going to
Snide
happen.
did that last season. You know, they Jerome Baker and Tyrell Dodson were the stopgaps, and Knight eventually took Dodson's job. Their other signing that they brought in from outside, Josh Jones, a swing tackle slash guard from the Ravens, 1 year up to $4.75 million. Again, we'll see, you know, how much of that is incentives and playing time bonuses. Served exclusively as a backup last season in Baltimore after starting three games in Houston in 23 and 21 between the 2021 and 2022 seasons in Arizona, who originally drafted him in the third round out of Houston. He's listed at 6'5", 339. So this is presumably the George Fant replacement.
It's kind of a position that you can never have too much experience depth. So I think a fine signing. But also wanted to mention on the offense being more expensive. Offensive line is a position that could become way more expensive over these next couple of years. Like the Charles Cross extension, when they're having that conversation next year, is going to be a massive deal that they're looking at, assuming he
Yeah, that's a
carries
good
on.
point.
And then, you know, they have to make a decision about Abe Lucas as well. And I think this year is going to be pretty important for them understanding, you know, who the right tackle is long term.
I mean, I do think this level of investment, like, it's someone who can start, but it's not, you know, someone who should start. It does seem to portend relatively good things about Abe Lucas's, you know, availability, but obviously they. You know, to your point about the draft, they can't know for sure about Abe Lucas's knee. I mean, I do think like this is a spot that people expected the Seahawks to spend and spend big on in free agency. I do think, you know, especially like if they do end up with two wide receivers in free agency, in addition to Marcus Lawrence, you're talking about positions that we thought they were very likely to draft and draft early, and it could make it all the more likely that it's multiple early picks on offensive linemen. So we'll see how that plays out. But I
I mean,
think that's
who is
you're
the
sort of in
offensive line right now?
conversation.
Do you think that they would that they're drafting? They're not drafting a guard in the first round. I can tell you that right now. But are you thinking they could possibly draft a tackle in the first round, have him compete with Abe Lucas, and then see what happens? Because almost that I don't want to say that they're going to get to too much depth, but like,
Don't say they're going to get to too much depth. I think they could. I think they could easily draft two guards because I don't think either guard position is filled right now.
Okay, it's just players coming in to compete with Christian Haynes, Anthony Bradford, players like that.
I
And
mean, the way that Anthony Bradford fell on the depth chart in his second season, I don't think you should assume for sure he's going to be on the roster this season.
yeah, but it's they're not going to be first round picks. They're going to be second, third, fourth round picks.
Presumably not, which the Seahawks do now have a lot of. They got the extra second round pick from the Steelers, the extra third round pick from the Raiders in those two trades. We also got the comp picks were officially announced by the NFL on Tuesday. Seahawks netted out the 137th overall pick in the fourth round, and then 172 and 175 in the fifth round, a little bit better than the over the cap projections, which had them with a fifth and a sixth. Just because kind of the uncertainty about how incentives and playing time factors into those, the how players are valued there. So there you go.
I want to see, is there a ranking of the most draft capital overall? Because the Seahawks have to be in the mix for it.
Yes, that would seem likely to be the case.
I'm not finding it super fast, but I mean, I think this is obviously an extraordinarily important draft for the Seahawks. It's funny we're talking about all these players because, again, I mean, feel relatively fine about most positions. Like, again, they're getting pretty close to their goal of being set everywhere,
Okay, here
right?
we are. Tankathon has this.
Okay.
And the Seahawks are seventh right now in terms of total value. And that's using a statistical chart, not the, traditional Jimmy Johnson trade chart. Cleveland, Jacksonville, Tennessee, New England, four of the top five teams are the top four. San Francisco is a bit deeper, at a number of compensatory picks. And then, the Deebo Samuel trade, some additional trades. They're the one, and then having a higher natural pick is the starting 11th. And then the Giants with the third pick are the other team ahead of them. So of teams not picking in the top 11, they have the most draft capital.
And then you look even further down from that. You have to go all the way down to 11 for a team that is drafting lower, right?
Yes.
So they're going to be able to – wow, the Bills have a lot of picks.
No,
they're
no,
gonna be
you
able
have to go all the way down to 13.
To find – to the Bills for a team
Yes.
that has a lower draft pick. They're going to be able to maneuver in this draft quite a bit, however they want to, which is great, I think, overall. And you can imagine them, say that they do move down from that first round pick. All of that just increases the value overall. It would be great if in the draft they ended up with possibly some additional capital next year, as far as picks go. I think that would be a good thing to get out of this draft, because 11 picks is a lot. And some of those are, near the back end of the draft overall. Still important players to the roster. I mean, you mentioned Will Freeze. I'm not saying it's a likelihood, but getting those like extreme depth players, I think, is still important. Picking up a running back or whatever in those places. This is going to be the draft that defines the Seahawks for the next 5 years. That is kind of the thing overall, that we're talking so much about Sam Darnold and Geno Smith. Like, Sam Darnold and Geno Smith are not going to be on the next Seahawks Super Bowl team. And there's a much higher likelihood.
I'm very confident Geno Smith is not going to be.
You never know. Never say never. But no, Sam Darnold and Geno Smith were not going to be on the next Seahawks Super Bowl team. This is still about setting things up long term and getting the roster to a place. Having those 11 draft picks is how you do it in the NFL. You have to find players through the draft who are giving you a ton of value on the field. That's what matters. Like, we talk so much about free agency because it's in front of us and they're nice little additional bits, but you look at all of the rosters that are constructed, the Eagles, who I mentioned, right? Saquon Barkley comes via free agency. It is a draft roster almost
100%.
completely. And the Kansas City Chiefs, same
it's a couple
thing.
of pieces. It's Saquon Barkley and Zach Braun. Bon?
Bon. He wasn't a free agent, was he?
Yeah, he was. Oh, he's a very
really?
cheap free agent. Yeah.
He was just a free agent that they signed for nothing,
he had been a
basically.
Special teams guy in, I want to say, New Orleans. Yeah. So.
Was he in Philadelphia before then?
No.
I, for some reason, thought he was on the Eagles the whole time.
No, they signed him last offseason.
I mean, that was great. But
I agree.
That was a great signing. But it was a little bit like, I took offense to Shiel Kapadia's
offense?
Grading of the Zach Bond signing. And, they're paying an off-ball linebacker up there with the highest in the league as far as off-ball linebackers. Like, getting a steal on a quarterback's, it's more of a risk in some ways to pay an off-ball linebacker as much as they're paying Zach Bond for one season. And, there's still the previous four seasons of barely being on the field. Maybe the Eagles figured it out. Maybe being part of the rest of the Eagles system was helpful. Everything else that they're doing, he was able to excel in that. But, like, things will get expensive for the Eagles overall. And
I mean, they're shedding considerable talent this offseason.
All of those things make it harder. So it was a little bit like, I don't understand how one is paying for the outlier, but one isn't paying for the outlier. And I really think it comes back to, people are just sick of Sam Darnold. I think people have a nagging suspicion. I think people feel it in their heart that they just will not trust Sam Darnold until he has done it again. But those things can change very quickly.
I think that's a completely fair feeling to have.
That's fine. Yeah, no, it's a completely fair feeling, but that's really what this is. Like, when you're saying that you're paying for an outlier for Sam Darnold and not for somebody else, it's like, yeah, people are just, they're concerned about Sam Darnold. We've been burned by Sam Darnold before, I guess. When you see a quarterback play badly, it's different than seeing Zach Bond play badly. But
well, you didn't see it.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't see Zach Bond start one game for the Saints in 2022. We didn't know what the fuck Zach Bond was. So, but that is what's going to matter, is the draft right now. We're in free agency. nailing this draft is what is going to matter. I don't know who they're going to draft, and I think there's all sorts of ways to look at it or whatever, but ultimately, getting a ton of talent that is on the field in the next couple of seasons is what is going to set them up long-term, more than Sam Darnold is. So seeing those compensatory picks, seeing the value that they got from DK, seeing the value that they got from Geno Smith, all of those things are going to matter. It's not going to feel it that way in the moment, but that's how these rosters are made. That's how the freaking roster was made the last time they won the Super Bowl, right?
Yep. So, and then a handful of timely free agents in the form of Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett.
Yeah.
And Matt Flynn. Matt Flynn's contract was not as big in hindsight as I thought it was. And then I saw a thing. Matt Flynn was making fun of Brock Osweiler's contract on Twitter. And so then people were, you know, making fun of him. And it's like, and it said in there that ESPN ranked it the sixth worst NFL contract of all time. And I'm like, it was like 10% of the cap, maybe, if that. Even
if only
was
we
like,
use somebody there.
Well, not in their NFL content. It was like peanuts, ultimately. Like, it didn't really matter. And I still think Matt Flynn was fully adequate. Brock Osweiler, on the other hand, was actively bad at football.
That
was
thing,
a way
though,
worse contract.
It's the emotional feeling of Matt Flynn's deal because he got
no,
beat out by
Russell. No, it's the
Russell
jokes
Wilson.
Of Matt
or
Flynn's
the jokes.
Duel.
But that's what a lot of this is. It's like, can we do this? How much can people joke about it on the internet? How much do we feel emotionally hurt by a player? Like, have we seen them play badly?
Has my fantasy team lost because of them?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the funny thing is Flynn didn't play almost at all. It was just, again, the joke of he got signed based on a limited sample and then never started. So it might have been better for him to be Charlie Whitehurst, I suppose.
Turned out fine. Well, he's never clipboard Jesus. Come on.
Nobody
can
be
Charlie Whitehurst.
All right, Seahawks did re-sign several other free agents. We did not talk about this on our last podcast, although it pretty much all went down on Sunday. Defensive tackle Jaron Reed got a 3-year, $22 million deal with $8 million guaranteed, including a $4.5 million signing bonus. This is, you know, one of those. This could be a 1-year deal for him for $8 million very easily. And given, you know, his experience in the Seahawks defense and a variety of Seahawks defense, his leadership role, like this deal all around. And then linebacker Ernest Jones IV got 3 years, $28.5 million, $15 million guaranteed, $7 million signing bonus, and then at $750K base escalators in 2026 and 2027, kind of similar to the Geno Smith deal that had those, although not it is considerable. This came in less than I expected, especially after seeing some of the other off-ball linebacker contracts this offseason. Feel pretty good about this one. Maybe a little bit of a concern that, you know, it suggests other teams were more concerned about the knee surgery he had, the knee cleanup that he had, but either way, feel pretty good about this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought this was a great deal. I mean, it also goes to show, this is true of Sam Darnold, this is true of Geno Smith. Leagues want to see it for more than a season. You know, what was the deal? Ernest Jones signed a minuscule deal the previous year, right?
No, he was still under contract.
He got traded? He got
traded
for nothing.
For limited draft capital.
So teams like to see it for a handful of years before they're willing to commit to it, you know, commit that much money. And I think they were aware. I'm skeptical how much the injury actually affected the market. And I think it was more his agent was canvassing and being like, this is about what makes sense. He probably wanted to stay in Seattle. It's the simplest. Seattle is going to bring him back one way or another. Like, they were going to find a way. And they went out there, they found what the market was, and it probably was more or less commensurate with what Ernest Jones is making here.
Probably so. Then Josh Jobe re-signed ahead of restricted free agency. Seahawks kind of took care of that one early. Jobe, it's going to be interesting to see what happens next season. He ended up playing a pretty important role for them last season, playing, you know, is part of that three corners with Reek Woolen and Devin Witherspoon on a regular basis. Trey Brown is the one Seahawks free agent who has headed elsewhere to the San Francisco 49ers. So that takes away some competition. Certainly a spot they could look to address early in the draft. But right now, Josh Jobe in position to, again, be an important part of this defense.
Yeah, really like Josh Jobe. I mean, I'm looking at Ernest Jones, his average salary among linebackers. You know, for Zach Bond, it's 12, but for Ernest Jones, it's 36. And I think that's a steal that they got for him.
You're saying the ranking among linebackers
yes,
based on
yes.
average per year. We're going to be following closely on Zach Bond next season, much like we did with Jalen Carter this year, despite you completely changing your take on that one midstream. Anything else on the Seahawks offseason or the Seahawks additions? Because we do have one other thing on the Seahawks offseason.
I feel totally fine with this offseason so far. In fact, I'm going to go out of the way and say that this is a B-plus
offseason. Oh, wow. There
so
you
far.
Go. I will formulate an opinion later.
Yeah. I mean, we'll formulate an opinion later, but again, process-wise.
But formulate an opinion, like, you can formulate new opinions. People start with an opinion, and then they formulate new opinions.
Okay, I'm going to make you formulate an opinion right now.
Oh, wow.
Because, again, we don't know how things are going to play out on the field. Sam Darnold might be,
of
obviously,
course.
It's a Darnold offseason. You know, he's the fucking quarterback. It's what matters. But
is it going to be a Darnold Christmas? Darnold New Year's?
I hope so.
A Darnold Thanksgiving. I don't know if you do. Some of the Seahawks
Darnold
New Year's, some of the Seahawks New Year's were not so good, not so hot.
I did boldly predict that I think the Seahawks are going to beat the Vikings on. I gave a specific date. I don't remember what that date was, but now it'll be a Sam Darnold revenge game.
Oh wow, I didn't think about that.
I also boldly predicted that they're going to draft Jackson Dart, which I feel a little bit less good about, but not completely not good about.
Not off the table. Okay.
I'm not giving up on that one just yet.
Not that easily. So are you asking me to give a grade to the Seahawks offseason?
Yeah, just give your B plus and we'll move on.
No, I'm going to say more of a B. I don't know if I'd go so far as to go a B plus.
You wouldn't give them the plus. I just think process-wise, honestly, the DeMarcus Lawrence contract is the only one where I'm like, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know about these bold predictions I made. I didn't write yours down, so I cannot speak to yours.
You're going to have to go back and listen. Hold on. I'll find them.
All right, let's go into the toast, though, and start off by staying with the Seahawks. And we have to give appropriate honor to Tyler Lockett, who was released by the Seahawks last Wednesday after a decade in Seattle, a move that unfortunately was overshadowed by DK Metcalf's trade request hours later. Lockett finishes his career number two in Seahawks career catches, yards, and touchdowns, the most yards per target of any Seahawks receiver with more than 50 targets, just ahead of the very similar Doug Baldwin Jr. A third-round pick in 2015, Lockett had four consecutive 1,000-yard seasons from 2019 through 2022. Only a one-time Pro Bowler is a kick returner as a rookie, but the
kind of
advanced
shocking.
Stats,
yeah,
I mean, it's not
even the
shocking.
Raw stats aren't bad.
You're right. The raw stats aren't bad, but the advanced stats, the open score from, you know, my ESPN colleagues when and ESPN research when they started to develop that, like, he was outstanding. And we will always fondly remember Tyler Lockett anytime a Seahawks receiver catches a pass and immediately goes down instead of being tackled.
We'll call that the Tyler Lockett.
I mean,
the catch in the
100%.
Corner of the end zone against the Rams is obviously his most famous catch that he had. But Tyler Lockett was able to go up and get those balls. And I was kind of looking at it. First off, the 2021 season where he had 1,175 yards, 16 yards per reception. How is he not a Pro Bowler that year?
Yeah. Well, speaking of not being fast enough to update your priors in the NFL.
Wait, what do you mean?
Like, the voters for the Pro Bowl didn't update their priors fast enough on
he
Tyler
has raw
Lockett.
Numbers. You just saying,
but
overall.
I'm saying, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They could not view him. So it's so funny. The Seahawks actually have not had that many great wide receivers in history. It's basically Steve Largent. And Tyler Lockett, I think, is pretty easily the second best wide receiver in Seahawks history, at least as far as his career with the team goes. And I don't really think it's that close because you look at some of the other players around him.
I mean, Baldwin,
and
unfortunately, his career was cut short by injuries. And
they were all relatively short, the runs that other wide receivers you would even talk about.
At any position, 10 years with one team is a lot. How many Seahawks played 10 years with the team? Like, I'm sure there were, you know, a lot of in the 80s and 90s, but especially in this era.
But Joey Galloway is somebody who, if he played his entire career, would have been, you know, he probably would have been in that conversation, but got traded relatively young. Doug Baldwin, unfortunately, had to retire relatively young. And Corn Robinson didn't pan out as much as childhood Tristan thought he was going to be the best receiver in the NFL.
Childhood Kevin was more of
Or
Wayne Blakey on the name
Charlie
of,
Rogers.
well, yes, but no, the wide receiver opposite Daryl Jackson.
Well, I mean, Daryl Jackson, they're not exactly the same time period, but
What do you mean?
I think Gordon
They
Robinson
played
is too.
together.
Wasn't Gordon Robinson before Daryl Jackson? Like,
I can't speak to who was first and who was second, but they definitely played together.
but that was the
Tyler
other
Lockett
thing.
in 2001 was ninth in the league in receiving yards. So I'm looking at the NFC receivers. Kupp, Jefferson, and Adams were 1, 2, 3. Those guys were surely Pro Bowlers. And I'm assuming Deebo Samuel got the last spot on the original roster. He was fifth in receiving yards. So it was kind of NFC heavy there. Whoever ended up in the, like, if there was an injury replacement, would not have been nearly as productive.
I guess Gordon Robinson really did overlap with D-Jack quite a bit.
Yeah.
D-Jack was here earlier. That's crazy.
Yeah,
But
that's what
the
I
other
thought.
thing, like Daryl Jackson, his run, he had 3,000 yard seasons, 2001, 2003, 2004. But then, Daryl Jackson's out of the league by the time he's 30. So, he fell off very, very quickly.
Which is not uncommon.
No, it's almost why you don't sign a massive extension for a 27-year-old wide receiver. Can't think of one.
Oh, the other guy who made the Pro Bowl that year. Actually, DeAndre Hopkins made it, did not have nearly as strong numbers that season. The other guy who made the Pro Bowl over Tyler Lockett in 2001 while being considerably less
Was
productive,
DK.
DK Metcalf.
Yeah, just marketing. DK Metcalf won the marketing.
I mean, he did have 12 touchdowns that season, which surely a big factor in it. Tyler Lockett had 8.
I will tell you, Tyler Lockett has the same amount of Pro Bowls as Corn Robinson, but and I think the same position
Oh,
for
Corn
most
Robinson
amount of
also
punting
got one
yards.
as a kick return. Okay, that makes sense.
1,240 yards in his second season.
He, I mean,
That
he
actually makes
had,
me
yeah.
a little nervous about a receiver in their second year.
No, I do not think those are similar players.
who
I'm
I've
not.
determined is going to be a top five wide receiver in the NFL next year.
We'll see if he gets there, but I think long term we're just fine with Jackson Smith and Jigba.
Yeah, I mean, those receivers that you're talking about, the Seahawks haven't really had, even like DK has had a good run with the Seahawks, but not anywhere near Tyler Lockett. And they haven't had, aside from
Wait,
Steve
DeAndre
Largent.
Hopkins made the Pro Bowl in 2021 when he had 42 catches for 572 yards and 8 touchdowns.
That's what I'm saying.
Maybe
I
he was
thought
injured
everybody made the Pro Bowl.
midway through the year. No, it doesn't look like there were, or I don't know, maybe they just don't list those. He got hurt, but he got hurt before the Pro Bowl selection. I don't know about that one.
Got hurt by the weight of his own marketing. But yeah, the Seahawks haven't had a receiver at the level of the Justin Jefferson's players like that, right? Who are some of the best in the league. And Tyler Lockett is, I think it's undeniable that he's the second best receiver in Seahawks history.
All right. A quick spoiler alert here. A Celebrity Jeopardy spoiler alert. If you do not want the results of Wednesday night's show, please skip forward 30 seconds. What we say, congratulations to Mina Kimes, third Felton brother Mina Kimes, who won her quarterfinal in Celebrity Jeopardy
Oh,
on to the semifinals.
wow. She
I
was
mean,
born for that.
yeah, this is not surprising at all. Congrats, Mina. We'll
How
have
do you
further
think
updates.
you would do on, I'm going to use the term, like maybe they have like very minor Celebrity Jeopardy. Is she's on the one like Ken Jennings, right? She's like real Celebrity
Whole
Jeopardy.
cast, yeah.
Okay. There's no
She
Colin
posted
Jost
about,
involved. Okay.
well, first off, let's not say that name so distastefully.
This is a Jost podcast. A little bit more of a Che guy myself, but okay.
It's
Did you
not a
watch the Lady
competition.
Gaga SNL?
I did. It was they broke out the after the 10 to 5, that's famously the absurd sketches. They were like, what if we made the whole show out of 10
I
to
was gonna
5?
say, I think it was maybe the best SNL I've seen in so long. Pip, I'm just like the Dan, I don't know what that Dan
Yeah,
Bala
the
or whatever. His two
Midnight
movies,
Movie, I
the
believe.
Midnight Movie, I'm like, sign me up for all of these. I thought Pip was phenomenal.
The one about the friendlies, that was one of the most absurd sketches I've ever seen.
Wait, I don't. I might have fast forwarded through that or not gotten there.
It
Friendlies.
got into like cult territory, basically. There was drinking of blood, that sort of
Wow.
thing.
That
And
was it was a powerhouse
does make me
performance.
think, we learned on the Discord, number one, that when I was talking about Lacey, I was thinking of Tumwater. Hashtag Feldenkrais Geography. But Ramtha's School of Enlightenment is an American New Age spiritual sect near the city of Yelm. The city was established in 1988 by Jay-Z Knight, who claims to channel a 35,000-year-old being called Ramtha the Enlightened One. These school's teachings are based on channeling sessions. Critics consider the organization to be a cult.
Oh, I mean,
Everybody's got haters.
I'll watch the Netflix documentary.
Even Ramtha has haters.
Anyway, you didn't answer how you think you would do. Let's say you didn't go to Yale after all, but
I did not go to Yale. I think
could you have gotten into Yale?
I don't know, maybe, probably not. I don't know. I
Wow.
haven't compared my test scores with Third Feldman brother Noah Cohen and Chris Wheeler or Mina Kimes for that
I was
matter.
gonna say
They're Feldman.
confirmed dumber than many members of the Discord, but not that we needed that, but we knew already going in. But there was you got the president's scholarship from UW, right?
That is correct.
I saw a video online and this girl's like unboxing the president's scholarship from UW, and there was like a whole fucking box of stuff. It was like fanfare for winning this. Did you get any? You just got an envelope, right?
I think I got a phone call.
A foot from the president.
No. I can't remember the name
Who
of the
was the
president.
president?
He went to Rutgers, I'm pretty sure.
I only remember athletic directors.
No, geez, I want to say Gervinho, but that was the athletic director before
Wait, who did you get a phone call from? I have to
from the
find this
Hutchins.
video. That person who's
Just
like
someone in the
unboxing.
office. It was not the actual
She's like, is this
president of
Kevin
the University of
Pelton?
Washington.
And she's like, is this ESPN senior writer
I
Kevin
don't even
Pelton?
know that I got the call. We'd
She
have to
had
ask mom. She
just a
probably remembers it
voicemail.
much more vividly than I do. She was very involved in this.
Was she? Did she lobby for it?
She like called them and was like, you know, he's getting scholarship offers from these other places. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's Tulane,
Oklahoma, notably. They are
Morehead
very interested in
State,
National Merit Scholars.
Oakland offered.
Where are you going with this?
I don't But so she called them and was like, this is great podcast content, by the way.
Yeah.
She was like, hey, ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton. That's what she called you at the time.
Richard McCormick was the president at that point. The president emeritus of Rutgers, having served as president there from 2002 through 2012. I drove him away.
Yeah, there we go. She was like, he's getting these scholarship offers from all these places. Where the fuck are y'all at?
I don't know that she put it exactly like that.
And then they gave her a call back and they were like,
They gave
best,
some member
best.
of our family. It could have been an answering machine. I don't know. It was the year 2000. It's not like they hit me up on my celly.
The future, Conan?
In the year 2000. Did you know how old we are? That we used to watch a sketch about how crazy things would be in the year 2000. It's
They did it way
2025
after. It was
now.
like
I mean,
1998 that they started it. Maybe 90, 95.
correct. Our most vivid memories of it are after, in fact, the year 2000. But still,
Genius.
the point
Genius.
remains.
He's hosting the Oscars now. Like, it's not
That's
that out of
true.
touch.
I'm not saying it's out of touch. I'm just saying that 2000 was a long time ago.
I agree with that. But
Literally 10 to 15
so
of
it
your
was
children have
just
been born
a
since then.
voicemail. Just a
I
voicemail.
don't remember.
They were like, hey, Tristan, tell your brother he got the president's scholarship.
It's like Schrodinger's cat, in case that comes up on Celebrity Jeopardy. They both called
You'll
me.
lose.
They called me, and they called mom, and they left a voicemail, and they called you. All of those things happened until we opened the box
There
and
was
talked to
nothing
mom
else.
and
But
remember
the
what I
box
said.
is now there's so much fanfare
Yeah, now there's a
over
literal
winning
box.
the president's scholarship. I saw it and I was like, this is fucking bullshit that you didn't get any of this stuff
I
because
mean,
I could have been there watching you open it.
I'm pretty sure I know what day it happened because
Is
it
that helpful for us?
was.
You're like, if you want to scan your old voicemails, like
I
what
was
is it
telling.
knowing what day it happened helpful for anybody?
I was going to tell a story.
Okay, fine. Tell us what
I
basketball
believe
game
it
happened.
happened on the same day as the Sonics beat the Jazz in game four of their first round series. So I was
Okay,
like,
great.
wow, what an amazing day.
That's so funny. You were probably more excited about the Sonics beating the Jazz.
Mean, in the moment, I don't know. It was there. It was
I remember
17,000
getting
people.
the
There was no
envelope when I got
box.
into UW, and I was just like, thank God I don't have to spend 2 years in Bellingham.
You did spend some time in Bellingham, as it turned out.
Like 3 days.
So again, the question is how I would fare on Celebrity Jeopardy, and I feel like, in classic B plus spirit, I could finish in second place.
Confident. I mean, it really
I'm
depends
optimistic
on
I
who
can keep
celebrities
it
are.
close enough for Final Jeopardy to matter.
The problem is, Mina Kimes is like, this is no offense to her, but she's not a celebrity. Like,
She's now
I.
been on both Celebrity Family Feud and Celebrity Jeopardy.
Who are the
So,
other people on there?
Fortune, the actor Fortune Femster was, I recognized,
No idea.
of Mindy Project fame, among others. I'm not
I give him
sure
the president scholarship.
who
This
the.
is what he uses it for.
Look, am I not repping UW harder, more harder than almost anyone who went there?
Not this girl
Like,
who I saw post her president scholarship on TikTok.
okay. Sure. Is she on national podcasts shouting out UW regularly?
Are we not
Maybe. I
counting this
don't know.
one?
I
We're
can't
not
speak
counting
for
this
it.
one, right?
No,
You're
I
talking about other podcasts.
meant the NBA podcast.
Okay. All right, good. Okay, so it was a person from the mini prod. That's what I'm saying. Mina is on the nerdier side of celebrity.
I mean, I think there was someone that said in their replies that it she was like born for this, or maybe she
Yeah.
said that. Yeah. So, anyways,
Well, congrats. Congrats to Mina.
no,
I'm just
you
like a.
ruined the spoiler.
You just said it.
I said it very generally.
You just said she was participating. You said she moved on.
Yeah, but I told people to skip ahead 30
Oh,
seconds.
sorry. That's a, come on. Nobody's actually. Every time I hear, there's like one time ever that I've heard somebody say that on podcast. I was like, whoa, ho. Nobody actually skips ahead. I haven't
I do
seen the
lots of
movie. I still
times.
listen to the rewatchables.
Congrats to Jordan Morris, who became the all-time leader in
Before
MLS Heroes.
Sunrise, I'm like, I like the podcast better. No, I've never seen it. I watched the first 20 minutes and I
No.
was like, I.
I like Before Sunset better. That could be a good Discord topic. Which is the best of the Before trilogy? I mean, I'd be a little surprised if someone said Before Midnight, but
Oh,
look, everything's
don't
got
ask
its
Mallory
place.
Rubin. Hey, Mal likes Before Midnight the most.
Oh, interesting.
Do you like?
That makes
I
me a
was just
little
like,
worried for her relationship, honestly.
I know that they are probably genius movies, but I watched the first, like the very beginning, and I was just like, Ethan Hawke in this movie makes me so uncomfortable right now. Like this persona,
You know, we have like the entire rundown to get to.
I can't watch. God, we have to talk about the Sounders.
I'm
Anyway,
sorry, as opposed to Ethan Hawke making you uncomfortable, this is the take you need to get off.
I'm sure it is a like brilliant movie. I thought about maybe watching it again. I didn't watch it. Still listen to the podcast. I wasn't worried about spoilers. Mina Kimes won, people.
Jesus. Ooh. It's 1:45 already. Congrats to Jordan Morris, who became the all-time leader in MLS Heroes Sounders scoring across all competitions with 87 by scoring Saturday against LAFC, surpassing Raul Ruiz Diaz. This one that has passed a few times lately because Freddy Montero held it for a long period of time. Ruiz Diaz surpassed him last season, I believe. And then Jordan Morris, hopefully going to hold this one for a long period of time to come as he's got hopefully many goals to come, although not for a little bit here, as we'll talk about later. Congrats to Division D1 Softball National Player of the Week, Alexis DeBoer, who hit five
Hello.
home runs in as many games at the Black and Orange Classic, hitting .538 with 8 RBI and 5 walks. DeBoer's 12 home runs now rank third nationally.
That
This is
is
wild.
incredible.
Is
Think
Alexis
about.
DeBoer the greatest DeBoer in UW Athletics
I was just
history?
going to say, think about how much UW Athletics has gotten out of the DeBoers, right?
Incredible.
Two seasons, three losses across 2 seasons. He's way worse in Alabama, right?
It's
We've gotten
undeniably true.
all of the goodness out of every DeBoer, so we won the trade.
Congrats to
Honestly, it's similar to Geno Smith and Sam Darnold. If you give me Jed Fisch plus Alexis DeBoer and a third round pick, that's way better than one.
They were
DeBoer.
Keeping Kalen DeBoer, Alexis DeBoer if Kalen DeBoer had stayed. I don't think she came from Alabama. Congrats to...
Also, financially speaking, Jed Fisch is getting paid less than Kalen DeBoer.
It is true. Congrats to Stevie Hansen, who followed a recent no-hitter with a perfect game in five innings against Montana, with Huskies winning 11-0 thanks to the run rule. It's the ninth perfect game in school history. Nancy Wagner, Jamie Graves, Daniel Lorry, and Gabby Plain previously threw them, with Lorry doing so four times and Plain twice. Congrats to Ella Dean, chosen to the All-Big Ten second team by coaches and media. She's the first UW women's basketball player to make All-Conference since Amber Malgoza in 2019-20. And lastly, on the UW women's basketball front, congrats to Sammy Whitcomb, the former star guard and UW alum who led the WNBL's Bendigo Spirit to the third league title in franchise history. Whitcomb was named MVP of the grand final to go with regular season MVP. There were some additional awards she won as well. Basically, the combination, the only other person who has done it, Lauren Jackson.
There we go.
There you go.
I love the pomp and circumstance of the word grand final.
It's true. All right, Mariners. I assume we don't have any takes this week.
I really am holding back until I'm actually trying to pay no attention to the Mariners until the season starts.
Okay, well, treat this like the Sounders section. George Kirby is expected to begin the season on the injured list after experiencing inflammation in his shoulder. An MRI showed no structural damage, but GM Justin Hollinger said, "This is more like a week-to-week thing than a day-to-day thing. We want to make sure we're doing the right thing for the big picture of the whole season as opposed to worrying about opening day." Emerson Hancock is set to take Kirby's spot in the rotation to begin the season.
You knew it was not terrible news because they trotted out Justin Hollander to deliver it.
No, he usually does the injury updates.
He only gets injury updates? That's what
not
he's
only,
there for?
He does a lot of the in-season communication. Did a lot more of it last season after the whole... we're doing you a favor. Comment.
You're welcome. We haven't done a you're welcome that often on this podcast.
some encouraging news on Mitch Garver. X-rays negative after he was hit in the hand by a fastball on Monday. Garver leads the team with three home runs, although Julio Rodriguez tied him after I wrote this note with a grand slam on Wednesday, and is posting a .944 slugging percentage in spring training so far. And obviously that's very predictive and an indicator is Mitch Garver's trend of playing well in odd numbered years.
I can't pay attention. It's too scary. It is too spring training is too scary.
This is among your strangest days.
And it's the same as preseason in the NFL. I don't want to see a second of the preseason in the NFL because I'm just terrified every second.
We're also glad that Rick Riz is feeling okay after taking a foul ball off the head in Monday's game. Scary situation. Returned to finish the call of the game, joking that his mom always said he had a hard head.
It is the most dad joke and baseball announcer joke of all time.
It really is like the handshake meme of those two particular things they came together on that one.
I love it. I love it so much.
So, again, happy he's feeling well. All right, Kraken, as we get into the roundup here. Big move leading up to last Friday's trade deadline is they sent Oliver Bjorkstrand and Yanni Gourde to the Tampa Bay Lightning on Wednesday for 2026 and 2027 first-round picks, plus a 2025 second-round pick, and Michael Isamont. Both picks are top 10 protected, with the Kraken receiving third-round picks if they don't convey as scheduled. They also retained half of Gord's $5.2 million cap hit. That won't affect them going forward, as Gourde was an expiring contract, while Bjorkstrand is signed through 2025-26. Third Pelton brother Ryan Clark at ESPN graded it an A, noting the Kraken had yet to acquire an extra first-round pick at any point in their dealing in franchise history.
All right, there we go.
So as I joked on Blue Sky, I happened to attend the Kraken game tonight, my first since 2022-23 season, and I wore my two first-round picks in cap flexibility jersey.
There we go.
The Kraken did win on Wednesday night, beating the Montreal Canadiens, Le Havre, in overtime. The fastest overtime goal I've seen this the fastest goal from the start of the overtime, and tied for the fastest from the start of any period in NHL history, is Brandon Montour. I believe intercepted a pass, if I'm remembering correctly, and
wow,
then drove in for the winning score.
That's awesome. So you left early. Did you leave early to do this podcast?
No, that was not the primary reason.
Okay, good. I was gonna correct you on your decision, if that's what you're doing.
It was also it was an impromptu Kraken trip that was not scheduled. I was planning to see Rainier Beer Odyssey at the SIF. I forget what
Uptown.
the name, not the Uptown. It's the one that's next to Vera. So
Just
we
the
walked right
Vera.
past the Vera Project, but we get there and there on the doors, sold out. No tickets available. No tickets available for Thursday night, unfortunately, if you were hoping to see Rainier A Beer Odyssey at SIF this
Are
week.
you sure it's not called SIF Cinema Uptown? There's a different one?
No, the one that's right next to the Vera Project.
Oh, actual SIF, like their
Yes.
offices. Got
Yes.
it.
Which is why it's easier to sell out than it is at SIF Uptown. But they needed to move it. They needed extreme demand. They apparently needed to move it.
I think that's just called SIF Cinema.
Okay. So ended up impromptu going to
I
the
didn't even
Kraken
know they
game.
showed like films there.
And did get a chance to say hello to Talkin' Taco Time co-host Randy Cote. So he's back from his travels. We'll have to get a Talkin' Taco Time on the books soon.
I said I'm available anytime.
You said anytime other than when you're coaching basketball practices.
So I'm done. Season's over on Saturday, so.
Oh, there you go. Okay, on Friday, this one tugged at the heartstrings. The Kraken sent fan favorite Brandon Tanev to the Winnipeg Jets for a 2027 second round pick. Tanev, another impending free agent, Clark graded this one a solid B for both sides. I think it was a B plus maybe for the Jets and a B for the Kraken. And you know I love that kind of trade.
I mean, it's one of those trades where it's like they weren't going to make the playoffs this year and they got a second round pick. So I kind of don't understand how that's not an A. Maybe he thought that they should have gotten more compensation.
They could have re-signed Tanev, I suppose.
They still can.
Overall, ESPN graded the Kraken an A minus for the deadline. Kraken GM Rand Francis was on the team's TV broadcast over the weekend, said, quote, "We're a lot closer than some people think we are. This is not a rebuild. We've got a lot of pieces in place. We're trying to make space to improve our team in the offseason. By moving contracts out, we've created around 20 million or more of cap space for free agency and potential trades. With 10 first and second round picks in the next three drafts, we have draft capital to use as well." So the one concern here is next summer, if Ron Francis is feeling pressure to keep his job and improve the team a little too quickly, but obviously that's not what happened here, where they did sort of take a very long-term view with these trades.
How much were tickets to the hockey game?
Less than face value. I got we sat in the first row of the, it's technically the 100 level, but the upper level for 53.
That's not bad.
No, very reasonable.
Yeah. We were not far from there for the Tyler concert. I feel like we were pretty close to where you're sitting.
So the Kraken, with that result, still fifth in the reverse lottery standings. They are 3 points out of the Nashville Predators, 4 points out of the Buffalo Sabres. Both of those teams have played two fewer games than the Kraken
What is
has.
a
So
reverse lottery?
I'm saying, like, if you look at the reverse standings
Oh, okay.
or the lottery standings.
Okay. I was going to say, I don't know. You could have told me that there is some sort of crazy rule in hockey that there's a reverse lottery, and I would have been like, yep, that makes sense.
That checks out.
So.
You assume I'd probably talked about it in a previous roundup.
Feel like you could have just said the lottery standings, but, you know,
Fine.
words don't matter on the Pelton cast. Look, you would have gotten second at Jeopardy, not first. It's fine.
I came out and said it. It's not an insult.
I'm just acknowledging. I think it'll be perfect.
Seattle Sounders have crashed out of the CONCACAF Champions Cup, facing Cruz Azul. After we recorded on Monday and previewed the first leg of this, we learned that Cruz Azul was basically not bringing any of their key players to Seattle for this matchup. They were prioritizing Liga MX play at the weekend in a way that the Sounders weren't. Despite that, Sounders still played to a scoreless draw and the home leg, and that did allow them to advance with a draw as long as they scored a goal Tuesday night in Mexico City. But with Cruz Azul's stars back in the lineup. They had way too much firepower. Broke the dam midway through the first half to take the lead. Added a second after the Sounders managed to keep it at that, you know, within striking distance for a long period of time. Sounders did pull back a goal here to make it 2-1, but then things really unraveled as the game started to open up in pursuit of a tying goal, and they ended up losing this one 4-1. But the more important element of this loss is the health element. Pedro de la Vega did not travel to Mexico City with the team due to injury. Still haven't heard more from the Sounders about that one. Then winger Paul Arriola left late in the first half with an injury that unfortunately it appears to be a suspected ACL tear that would end his season. And then Jordan Morris, coming off that record-setting goal, pulled up with a hamstring injury in the second half and is also going to be out a period of time. So we've Nice. Talked about the Sounders accumulating depth. It's going to be tested now. The good news is, with the Sounders out of the Champions Cup, they have no more midweek matches scheduled until mid-May. It's just going to be basically this every weekend situation in MLS play. The other good bit of news is we were fearful that the Sounders might open with 1 point from their first three league matches, and that was not the case. Call an ambulance, but not for them, because they handed LAFC a 5-2 loss Saturday. An enormous scoring outburst against a team that they had real trouble unlocking offensively in a stretch where they lost all of their key games against LAFC last season. So, you know, it's early on, and Paul Arriola was involved and unfortunately now is not going to be going forward. But a very encouraging sign that this could be the Sounders team that we thought going into the season it would be. This Saturday, they will continue MLS play at St. Louis City SC. Seattle Reign FC set to open up the 2025 season. This Saturday, they'll be on national TV on ION as they host Gotham FC. It's a rematch of the 2023 NWSL Cup and also a revenge game for Lynn Biendolo, who gets to face her former Gotham FC team in her first game for Reign FC. So really excited to see what this roster is going to look like out on the pitch in a competitive game, get a better feel for whether the Reign have a chance to really be competitive a year after finishing well out of the playoffs in kind of what was a transition season with the takeover from Sounders FC, the sale from Olympique Lyon, the rebranding, you know, a transition year in many ways, also the Megan Rapinoe's retirement and the loss of multiple starters to Gotham FC. So a lot of ties here. Rose Lavelle coming back to Seattle once again. So going to be interesting, is along with Emily Sonnet. So going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
I feel like every New York team, we've talked about this, has really missed by not claiming the name Gotham.
It is a great name to have. Although Gotham, on the other hand, Gotham is a kind of a hellscape.
You're saying in Batman?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's
really
cool
a horrible
as hell.
Place to live.
It doesn't matter.
But it sounds terrific.
Yeah. It sounds, I was trying to think of like where it could make sense for, I feel like the Brooklyn Nets, like they could have figured that out somehow
right.
along the way. They definitely wanted it to be like, we are in Brooklyn.
That
we is
wanted
the,
to brand
the
it
most
that way.
Important thing about the Nets is that they happen to be in Brooklyn, right? Like that's it. But beyond that, I was like, I mean, I think the Gotham FC is definitely, they nailed it.
Apparently, Washington Irving came up with the name Gotham as a nickname for New York City. He took it from the English village of Gotham, Nottinghamshire, which was known for the Wise Men of Gotham story, a legendary incident where the village's residents feigned idiocy to prevent a royal visit from John, King of England. So, there you go.
Well, okay. That is information we've learned.
Look, that could come in handy on Celebrity Jeopardy someday.
Yeah. What part of this phrase or this like paragraph of information that you were saying?
Who coined it? Washington Irving.
Washington Irving. Okay, you're gonna have to remember that.
Yeah.
We'll keep watching this throughout the next season. See if you remember that. When we're following up on Nick Bond season. Be like, remind me again who coined Gotham as a nickname for New York. If you come up with Washington Irving, I will be very impressed.
Who knows if I can tie it to the sporty event that I attended tonight. Maybe a little stick in there.
In the year 1999. I don't know if you're still able to do that with sporting events, which, by the way, revisiting some bold predictions, I found them.
Okay.
December 21st, 2025, on a game flexed out of Sunday Night Football.
Wow, they're gonna flex the Darnold revenge game out?
Well, I didn't know that at the time.
I'm aware. I'm
I
just
thought
saying.
Geno Smith was going to be the quarterback. There was not a doubt in my mind. Well, I thought either Geno Smith or Jackson Dart, based upon the previous bold prediction,
Correct.
was going to be the
You did only
quarterback.
give it a 90% chance of returning by the end of the season.
They get revenge against the Minnesota Vikings, and starting quarterback JJ McCarthy nailed it. But what I meant to say
Yep.
was Aaron Rodgers put them in position to clinch a playoff spot with one win in the final 2 weeks. So.
I would pay anything to be able to play. I don't know, I'd pay anything, but I would love to see the Seahawks get to play Aaron Rodgers again. The more we get to see this era of Aaron Rodgers, the better.
I feel a lot of my, because I was very bullish on the Niners in there, and I still kind of am based upon the bold predictions, but they're learning what life is like having to
Wait,
pay
we
a
haven't talked
quarterback.
about, like, we talked about Cooper Kupp as a player in the NFC West who was released. Kyle Juszczyk reunited with Clint Kubiak, finally
Do we
using a
want this? I can't tell if
fullback.
we want this.
I don't know that we don't want it.
Okay.
So the Vikings, yeah, the Vikings finished second in the NFC North, so therefore they are scheduled to play each other next year. Okay.
The Seahawks and the Vikings. You think I didn't look this up? You think I
Well, it
didn't
wouldn't have been
research this?
guaranteed at that point because the Vikings could have beat the Packers in one,
No,
or
that's
the
why it was a
Vikings could
bold
have beat the,
prediction because
I'm
I
sorry, the
also was
Lions.
boldly predicting the fall of Sam Darnold in week 17 against the Lions.
I mean, it wasn't that bold, but it was not guaranteed at that
I
point.
think we kind of knew.
We
There's
had
no
looked
offense to Sam Darnold, but I think we
at
kind of knew that.
the Vikings point differential.
I mean, the more shocking thing was what happened to the Lions after. Anyway, I'm less bullish. I think the NFC West in general, people who are really concerned about Sam Darnold and the risk of Sam Darnold, I think the NFC West in general is not as good. I mean,
I
Devontae Adams
mean,
signing, but like.
I feel like that actually makes the case for keeping Geno Smith because, again, we just made the argument that it's adding some uncertainty. So that's upside, but it's also downside. And if you don't think the division is very good, you want less volatility.
I think the amount of uncertainty with Geno Smith is precisely the same as the amount of uncertainty with Sam Darnold.
I think the Darnold uncertainty is higher, just that people are making the Smith uncertainty out to be much less than it is. All right, UW softball. 5-0 weekend at the Black and Orange Classic, now
There we
running a
go.
14-game winning streak, all against non-Power 5 opposition. So we will see. They're getting put to the test right away as they start Big Ten play this weekend by hosting number 8 Oregon for a 3-game series. The
Them.
Ducks went 22-2 in non-conference play. They're only number 24 in softball RPI, for what it's worth. The Huskies are 34th by that measure.
What does Bart Torvik have?
Does not yet have the college softball rankings updated. We'll see any day now whether they get that
It's a
going.
good thing for them that we're not having a foot race because you know they would lose that one.
Oh, there it is. The slow team down south. We'll see how good they are at slugging. Yeah, this is gonna be interesting. There has not been a real test in a period of time for Oregon transfer Stevie Hansen on the hill against, I guess they don't call it a hill, in the
Wow.
circle. In softball against her former team, and then Alexis DeBoer after this red hot weekend in Idaho, going up against Oregon. I'm curious, very curious to see
It's
how
a
this
revenge
goes.
game. You hear that, Jabbar Muhammad? Revenge.
I
You think I've forgotten?
he did the revenging. All right, let's
On
wrap
what?
up.
For going to the national championship? What was the revenge for?
It's
Having a.
unclear in this case what the revenge was for. And I think Stevie Hansen also was happy with her time at Oregon. She just didn't, struggled in her last season and lost her spot in the rotation. So
Oh, that's how you know she wants revenge, though.
I'm sure she would be happy to prove to Oregon that she is the same player she was early in her career there. All right, let's wrap up with UW women's basketball. We did mention in the emergency pod that they got a crucial 79-65 win against fellow bubble team Minnesota on Wednesday in the opening round of the Big Ten tournament. Thursday moved on to take on Michigan, suffered a 66-58 loss. This was a game that was Really, there for the taking was anybody's game in the third quarter. I was listening to this one on my flight to Boston, having completely neglected the time zone change and not realized that it was starting at
I
11:30 a.m.
questioned
Pacific.
you on the time and you doubled down. Do you
It's
remember
weird because I knew the time correctly of the game on Wednesday, but not the game on Thursday.
that?
That was very
I was just,
confusing.
I think I was surprised that it was later where I was like, I feel like these are in the middle of the day, but.
Huskies were down, were led
Well, you didn't go to
39-36.
Yale, so.
There's a reason I'm not winning Celebrity Jeopardy. Huskies led 39-36 with 6:37 to go in the third quarter. Michigan followed by going on a, I'm scrolling a lot here, a 13-0 run. Huskies were scoreless for the next 6 minutes before they scored at precisely the 37-second mark of the third quarter. Michigan opened up a 11-point lead going to the fourth. Huskies continued to hang around, chipped away a little bit late, got it down to seven a couple of times, but could get no closer. This loss did, I think, look somewhat more impressive. Michigan went on the next day to blow out Maryland, the number four seed, before finally losing to top-seeded UCLA. This turned out to be a really good Michigan team. They're
Who
now
won
up to
the did
20th in
UCLA win the Big
by
Ten
target.
tournament?
UCLA knocked off USC. The
They played
Trojans
each other again
won.
in the championship.
The Trojans won both head-to-head meetings in the regular season. UCLA finally got one here and is the first Big Ten championship in program history. So
You really have
Huskies.
to say to yourself, I feel like the Midwestern teams maybe did it wrong, bringing us in.
I think they knew in women's basketball they were presenting a challenge unless Caitlin Clark came back. Huskies 38th in the Bart Torvik rankings as of the end of the season, one win above bubble. If you look at bracketology right now, there was one bid thief in the A10 regular season champ. Richmond lost in the semifinals, still going to comfortably make it as an at-large. George Mason, now the automatic qualifier from the A10, a team that would have been presumably below the Huskies, is an at-large team. So Huskies now the second, the third from the bottom of the last four in on ESPN bracketology.
Okay,
So
and
probably
conference
safe.
tournaments are done.
They are not done, but the ones that are still going on are almost
Major
certainly
conferences
single
where
bid
everybody's,
conferences.
yeah. Oh, okay,
No,
small
it's the
conferences.
opposite. The power
Okay.
conferences all played last week because
Weird.
they play, many of them play in the same location, women and men, so
They just have
therefore
to
have
beat
to
out
have
the
it
men's
different
tournaments.
weekends. And therefore, there's more opportunities for national TV last weekend than there will be this weekend. So that's why that takes place that way. So there's not really much that can happen now. It's just a matter of kind of how the selection committee views the Huskies. They should be in. It's nice to just go into Selection Sunday with something at stake for the first time since the 2019 men, but still a little nervousness about the Huskies until we actually see them pop up in the bracket on Sunday afternoon.
Okay, but we're feeling good going in.
We're feeling good. None of the other teams that were on the bubbles, really had strong runs in the conference tournament, so they should be fine.
Okay. Phew. All right, that feels good. I mean, I'm excited for it to pay attention to an NCAA tournament that has a Husky basketball team in it because it has been a while.
It has been more than a minute. It has been many minutes.
Are they most likely going to be in a play-in game though?
I would, based on that, yeah, I think first four
As an
is
11
likely
seed.
beckoning. Yeah.
Okay.
Could be a 12, but I think probably an 11.
Do they pick where they slot those, or is it the 11 and the 12?
Oh, they would both be the same seed, obviously.
But I'm
Or you're
saying,
saying,
are they 11 seeds? There's four games. It's 16 seeds and 11 seeds, right?
No, it's 16 seeds in the last four teams in the bracket. So right now, ESPN with Charlie Cream is projecting Iowa State and Princeton as 10 seeds, Washington and Harvard as 11 seeds.
Okay, so we would play Harvard.
I mean, in practice, they're just doing
Would
that
be
because
your rival.
Harvard and Princeton both being in the Ivy League,
Princeton?
they couldn't face each other. One of those teams, they are still playing for the Ivy League championship. One of those teams will automatically qualify and will not be in the first four. The other will probably not make it.
If I have seen Gilmore Girls, and I have, I know we hate Harvard.
It's true. We learned at a meetup of the Discord that Chris Wheeler was in the dorm that Rory Gilmore was in at Yale.
He lived in the dorm?
Yeah.
Hello! You saved this for the end of the podcast?
I didn't really know how much Yale talk there was going to be.
I grabbed the mic for that one. This is
You
Gilmore
did.
Girls talk, thank you. But
We're into the after the pod talk already.
are we on
I
that
don't
note?
know. If we're talking about Gilmore Girls, I feel like we are.
Wow. I'm sh like literally, so they had like a multi-person dorm or whatever. He lived in that exact dorm.
That was my understanding of what he said. Yeah.
That would be all that I talked about forever.
It wouldn't be about going to Yale with Mina.
No.
That wouldn't come up.
No, come on.
I
Mina's
mean, I
not
guess,
that famous. Like Mina, she's
but
been on this podcast.
within our circle,
I guess so.
did you get a text from mom that Mina was on Celebrity Jeopardy? Because I
Jan
did.
texted you? Wow, I'm a little offended she didn't text me.
Yeah. She
That's
says you're not the Celebrity Jeopardy material.
She was like, you know, this is a college that you might have been waitlisted for. She's like, don't you know that? I'm actually sh more shocked that Jan knows who Mina Kimes is and knows that you know who Mina Kimes
She
is.
was there for the PoltenCast Live from Home, where Mina was the featured
Oh,
guest.
okay. She is the first PeltonCast guest to be on Celebrity Jeopardy. Is that right?
I don't think that Sue Bird has. I can't rule it out.
Have they ever had Hersey Hawkins on there?
Not to my knowledge.
Well, you'll be the next.
Don't know if I count as a guest.
I'm shocked by this. It is funny. Do you ever think about how, like, sometimes crazy things happen in your life and you're just like, it feels normal? You know, like
Yes.
having a burger from Little Woody's, like, that's kind of a weird thing to happen,
It's a
right?
very weird thing to happen.
Just like, whatever. You know, like having a sponsorship from Pagliacci. Like, I was walking around today, and the person I was walking with, she was like, you're sponsored by Pagliacci. And I was like, yeah, I guess so.
What? You were
Not, it's
blasé
not
about
bad
it?
about Pagliacci, but like, I don't. What does it
You're
mean for my
just used to
weekend?
it?
You know what I mean? Yeah. I feel
Okay.
like shooting a shot from half court at the Sonics game comes up more often than any of those things.
Yeah, I suppose so. This has become what's your most random story or the most. I was telling the story at the Kraken game because they did during a timeout. It was like team trivia with a Canadiens fan and a Kraken fan. And the questions for the Canadiens fan were all like,
I've seen
what
this.
happened in.
Yeah.
Oh, you saw it on
Not
social?
today's, but I've seen it
Oh,
before.
yeah.
It's like a bit they do.
Yeah, it was all questions from and I'm well, we'll get to that. All questions from like the 1960 like
What are we getting
1916 and
to? Is the
1920s.
podcast
No, my comment on it. And then, you know, the Kraken fan, they're asking which Kraken player wears number 35 to somebody a fan wearing a Joey DeCord jersey.
That
So
my biggest concern would be that I would miss the easy questions.
I
Because I always think of that
can't
with the
remember.
Kraken, where they're like, what color are the Kraken home jerseys? And I'm like,
But you had been at the Kraken game? You hadn't noticed what color their jerseys were?
There was at least one question where I was like,
The
I think
second question, I think, was more legitimate. I forget what it was, though. The third question was whose bobblehead night was it? And that was also Joey DeCord. So two of the three answers were Joey DeCord.
Oh,
Who is
okay. They're all Joey
Joey
DeCord.
DeCord? It's a setup. It was a setup. You need Luca to watch Seinfeld so you can get the
I literally
references.
told him. I told him to watch Seinfeld.
So I was reminiscing about the time that I was in an on-court promotion as the visiting Los Angeles Sparks fan.
Oh, I remember that.
So that's a very random thing that has happened in my life, where so it was
Didn't you
supposed to be
win? Oh, tell that story.
a setup. We had filmed a video earlier in the day at Key Arena where Doppler, the Storm mascot, locked me outside after I walked out of there as part of this promotion where I was blindfolded and supposed to walk around. Like, I think I was supposed to find a basketball or something. I don't know, or shoot a layup. I don't even remember what the task was, but I got out there legitimately blindfolded, and the crowd doesn't know the setup. So they're just kind of like sending me all randomly over the place with their booing and cheering. Like, you're supposed to boo when you're
Yeah.
colder. cheer when you're warmer. And so I can't see. So I just wandered around the court for 30 seconds and we never played the video. And then I went back and kept keeping stats for David Locke.
Didn't you do an on-court promotion for Husky basketball where you won a copy of like Madden 90, I guess
Oh, I did
2001 or
not win
whatever?
a copy of
Or did
Madden
you win a
90.
PlayStation, right?
No, they were not. They were not giving away PlayStation.
We got a PlayStation like 2 or 3 somehow.
I don't know how that was, but it was not thanks to the University of Washington Athletic Department. Yes, I was in the dog pack for a game during probably Christmas break in my freshman year. So the year 19, the year 2000, same as the Sonics playoff series, and the President Scholarship, and
You
there
owed it
was
to the school to go
it
after the full ride.
was the least I could do. Legitimately the least I could. So there was three of us out there and it was like a Secret Santa, not a Secret Santa, it was like a white elephant sort of situation. So I unwrapped a Madden, a copy of Madden for the PC, and then someone else stole it from me
If you want to know how long ago this was.
and I ended up with a dog pack t-shirt and a pom pom.
Oh, great.
It was a great t-shirt. I wore that for many years.
I'm sure you did. Maybe you're still wearing some
But
shirts
the
that you had in
real
the year
story is
2000.
that on the microphone, I said, I'm Kevin and I am single. There's something along those lines.
They asking you that?
No, that was just
You
volunteered
accidentally said
information.
it?
I'm not accidentally.
You were trying to like.
I don't, I can't get myself in the mind of
This is the
18-year-old
least
Kevin.
Kevin Pelton thing that I've ever heard. I might have
I
to pick up the
agree.
microphone again that this happened. How did I not know that?
And I did it from the location where they filmed Gilmore Girls.
You said I'm Kevin and I'm single?
Something along those lines. I don't
That
remember
is
exactly.
crazy. That does it is so out of character.
I agree.
Wow. I've tried to explain like the contest that I won, the like Lazy Boy. Because it was all of the random things, or it started with doing the halftime
80s
contest,
trivia. Yeah.
80s trivia. It was 90s trivia, thank
Oh,
you.
was it? Okay.
I'm pretty sure it was 90s, which like my wheelhouse, right? And I was like trying to, I was like, there are
So you're
like
going on the
images.
Jost Jeopardy?
I was like, there are images on the screen of various 90s things. And I was like, it was a fucking massacre, right? It was like Squatch was going out of his way trying to stop me from winning. And you know me, I go all the way. I was not sandbagging at all, right?
It was 90s trivia. I have the email right here.
You have the email? You didn't remember the exact day off the top of your head?
I didn't, but I
I
the
want to say
Google
it was
search worked.
in March, February.
The email is from February 2007, so
There we go.
yeah. Well, what
But
was
so
the game where you shot the half court shot? Do you remember who they were playing?
I want to say it was the Suns. I definitely sat half court against the Suns one time. I'm pretty sure it was that, or it was a different time I sat, not half court. I sat court side against the Suns. It might have been a different game that I sat, because I sat court side a few times.
They played the Suns February 14th at home. That's plausible, but not likely.
What day was the email from?
February 9th. And so it appears the game was February 10th against the Sacramento Kings, a 114-93
I
loss.
think there was more time in
I
between.
agree. I think it was probably after the All-Star break.
That could have been a different. I just remember seeing Amari Stoudemire up close and being like, "My God." But then, yeah, it's the combination of winning the game at halftime in '90s night, then just sitting in a lazy. I was like the whole story. I was like, "Oh yeah," and I was sitting in a Lazy Boy, and they put three of them out there for us because Jan needed a Lazy Boy. It's like the only time all year that we had three. And then I had to take a shot at half court.
Wild.
So, but I don't know, just I don't know, kind of happens. You live in the Gilmore Girls, dorm at Yale, and you just carry on. It's a little strange. I wanted to say to you though, the commitment to that Luka baseball season started this weekend. I know I've told you that we need baseball desperately, right?
I'm aware that your baseball season started. You're going to tell the story?
What story? That Luka had pneumonia?
Yeah.
And that we prioritized baseball over pneumonia?
Yeah, I feel like it's not exactly parent of the year material.
Oh, I could not have stopped him. Parent of the year material? He would have learned how to drive to go to the baseball game himself. He would have found a way to get to fucking Chehalis. Had we tried, there was not a chance that he would have had to have been hospitalized to have missed playing. But I was like, you know, he pitched fine.
How's he feeling?
He's okay.
The
he's got
one
a,
thing
he got a little bit of pneumonia left. But anyway, it was four innings,
pneumonia.
two earned runs, but
it's not like a beer. It's like he's got like 4 ounces left of pneumonia.
I almost texted his coach. He's got a little touch of the pneumonia.
Oh,
but it's like four innings, five hits, six strikeouts, two earned runs. I felt like one of them should have been unearned, but that's fine. And I was like, his stuff was just, it was okay. But then I was kind of like, if you factor in that he had pneumonia, then I feel like it was a better performance. Because he was like, I was gassed right away. I was like, you're running a little high, not hitting your spots exactly. I'm like, the run on some of these fastballs was pretty bad. We had you clocked at 63. He was definitely pitching faster than that, but where the gun is at. So anyway, I felt like with pneumonia, you know, picking
Wait,
up
what
a
do
win.
What do you think he typically hits now?
I don't know, 67, something like that.
So too fast for us to hit now?
Oh, no. Well, he probably could strike me out.
I mean, I guess I definitely hit against some pitchers who were throwing probably 70 when I played Kent Parks and Recreation. But I did have as many hit-by-pitches as actual hits that season.
And he probably wouldn't hit you. He is a little terrifying to hit against, though. When he's going, like, I hit with him in a catcher last year, and I was like, this is a little scary. But anyway, with pneumonia, I felt like that was pretty good. But then I was thinking about it. I felt this all along. I might have said this before, but there are people who, like, the coach after was like, great tournament. They won the tournament or whatever. Pneumonia, it's fine. So they win the tournament, and then the coach is his first time coaching. He coaches, his name is literally Doug Christie, which is incredible.
Really?
Yes, Doug Christie said the email. He's awesome. But he was like, these kids are so tight. He was like, I know people get excited about the game, but can we yell a little bit less or whatever? And he was like, these kids are tighter than the 18-year-olds who play. And it's like, well, first off, the people at the program are screaming at them constantly every practice. So maybe that's why they're tight. He was like, I'm not going to yell at them about anything. He's like, hustle is all I care about. I don't care if they strike out. I don't care if they make an error, whatever. He's like, I just want to see that people are hustling. And there's like one parent on the team, but I was thinking of this, is like, he cheers for them like he's a fan of the team. And I love it so much because I'm like, every like coach is like, you know, like, don't get too invested. They're just children or whatever. And I'm like, I get invested in adults playing sports that I don't know at all. Right? Like,
That's
I
true.
will be mad. I'm invested in St. Mary's Gonzaga. Like, the amount that this actually matters to me. But for a moment, I'm like, oh, you know?
You know very little about whether Ryan Nemhard was playing with pneumonia.
Yeah, I would assume probably not. I feel like basketball is a little harder to play with pneumonia. But there was that period where somebody, like, who was it who dominated with COVID, right? He had that one game.
Christian Wood.
Yeah, Christian Wood. But I was like, I know all of these people. Of course we're invested in the game. It's like watching a sporting event. I like watching sporting events with people that I don't know. So sitting and watching a sporting event with children who I know, all of them, all of their parents have known them for multiple years. Of course I'm going to be involved, but there's one parent, he's a grandpa, who like cheers for the team, and he'll like get mad when they do stuff wrong. And that's how it's kind of like, he's like really cheering and supportive or whatever, but he'll be like, oh, should have done that and stuff. And I'm like, it's hilarious to cheer for children like you're cheering for any other professional sports team or whatever. But it makes complete sense because if you like watching sports, you like watching almost anybody play sports. And if you know them personally, there is that much more of an impact.
I suppose so. I feel just, you know, I go to Mateo's basketball game. I'm clapping for both teams when they score, you know.
So you're not competing.
We've established that already.
Did you hear about his buzzer beater this week?
No.
Oh, it was heard around the world. At baseball practice today, people were coming up to him being like, are you the Mateo who hit the buzzer beater?
Wait, is that a serious?
No, that literally happened.
Wow.
Today.
So the story was being told about Mateo, and they were unclear whether it was him or another Mateo.
I think they were playing on the other team and saw it.
I see.
And if I'm being honest with you, all the kids, so the buzzer goes off, second to last basketball game, buzzer goes off, hits it from like it would be like a children's three, you know? It was like not super far past half court. It was a bomb. It was a great shot. Definitely left his hand after the buzzer.
Oh, wow. Good thing there's no review.
I'm just being honest. And people are celebrating. People are jumping up and down. Everybody's coming over to me. All the kids are like, does that count? And I'm like, they don't keep score.
Exactly. They're not going back to Secaucus to check out that one.
Like, telling all the children, I'm like, it counts if we say it counts. Like, it doesn't
really
matter. What
would be the Kent equivalent of Secaucus?
Secaucus, New Jersey. I guess it's Newcastle.
We'll leave that as an exercise.
Covington.
It's definitely not either of those places.
What is... Because what does Secaucus, New Jersey mean?
Well, it's like an office park, basically. That's like near New York.
It's probably like the business park with the Carl's Jr. down the street or something like that. Maybe it's the Chuck's Donuts.
It's the part of South Center that isn't actually South Center, where it's like, you know, like behind, like when you're driving to the Costco.
Sigali Business Park.
I didn't want to impugn Sigali Business Park that way, but it is the most Secaucus area.
Anyway, the kids are all like, did it count? And I'm like, Luca, can you just count that in Game Changer? And he's like, I counted it. And I'm like, great, it counts. There's no official review here. They don't keep score. But there was much debate about whether it was legit or not. And I'm like, of course it was. It was like a full, like full second after the buzzer went off. But don't tell Mateo that.
Everything's legitimate in your heart. On that note,
thanks for listening.
Thanks.